From Moscow with love, this is Vasily and Natalie on Radio Sputnik. Broadcasting from Moscow to the world, online, on digital, shortwave, and on your mobile. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. We have a letter from our listener, Keep Ivanov, and it set me thinking.
Oh, goody, finally.
He writes, here's a quote from a very popular TV show in the United States called The Americans.
I love that show. I love it.
You Americans think everything is white and black. For us, everything is gray. Nina Sergeyevna, The Americans. Nina is in the KGB, assigned to the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. She says this to an FBI agent, Beeman, as they're beginning an affair. Does this truly reflect the basic Russian psyche? And could you give some PG-rated examples? I believe I know what this means, but I want your unadulterated opinion.
Well, Kip, my opinion is that...
Kip goes on to answer his own question. He says, I believe the people in the scene reflect people of any nation who are trying to justify actions which they know to be wrong. In this case, adultery. On the other hand, people who live by their faith of any nation are given a guide by which they are to judge their own actions. The Ten Commandments for Christians. God says, you shall not commit adultery. That is black and white. Living this way is also impossible on our own without the help of God. And I think this is turning into a sermon, so I better stop.
Can I voice my opinion finally?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you. I personally think fornication between an aging American Fed and a sexy Soviet spook can only contribute to bringing the two nations closer together. I'll never forget a commentary I was handed back in the early 80s. I was supposed to read it for some program on Radio Moscow World Service in this very building. Hardcore politics and propaganda, and as always, I had no idea what the author was trying to say. Hey, I was just a kid back then. In addition, there was the issue of it being translated from Russian into English. Anyway, the theme of the commentary that I was about to read was Soviet-American relations.
Who could have seen that coming?
Yes. There was one sentence in the whole commentary that burned a hole in my brain. It read, "We in the USSR welcome the intercourse between the Soviet and American peoples." Amen to that!
Amen, brothers and sisters.
But to be fair, you know, it is an interesting subject, and it's not, you know, a simple black or white.
I know what you mean, and I think you're right. And it's not that Russians see everything in gray colors, where they have no moral norms. No, it's just one of many stereotypes that exist in the West in regard to Russia. Kip is absolutely right when he says that the scene in the TV show The Americans reflects people of any nation. As for the problem of adultery, I'm afraid there can be no black and white answer here. I mean, we all know what's good and what's bad, as well as the Ten Commandments. And if people are lucky and they love and trust each other, they can live happily ever after and die on the same day. That's an ideal situation. But life is so unpredictable. And when young people take their vows, they don't know what awaits them later in life, who they may meet, what they will feel towards each other and towards somebody else later in life. So it takes a great deal of effort on both parts, a great deal of sympathy and concern for each other, and a great deal of wisdom, which comes much later, to stay together and remain faithful to your better half. And then there is also such thing as passion, which is very difficult to restrain. That's why I believe there can be no black and white solution here. Kip, you were asking for better than PG-rated examples.
And you gave him a full-blown sermon. I don't think you actually got the question. I think he meant something else. But let me try it. As far as seeing things as black and white, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine, a Russian diehard bleeding liberal, as Maud would say, who complained that, well, observed actually, he observed that society in Russia and in the world at large sees things as strictly black and white. And that is noticeable here in Russia, where society is separated on many issues, strictly black and white. You are either good or bad.
Oh, mm-hmm.
That's also what it was like in the States when we talk about TV shows. As a kid, I'll never forget feeling, how should I put it, uneasy every time Russians were portrayed or depicted in sitcoms and movies. They were always portrayed as idiots.
Right.
Period. Why? Who cares? Russians, idiots. Bad. Russians, bad. The only exception to this was a wonderful movie called The Russians Are Coming, where both sides are shown for what they're worth. As for Nina Sergeyevna saying, you Americans think everything is white and black, for us everything is gray, I don't know. I don't agree. Having been born and brought up in America, having worked with Americans in Russia, it is my belief that it's the Russians who see things as black or white. It's either niet or nothing at all.
Which is the same thing.
Probably, yeah. Americans, on the other hand, tend to look at things through a prism of half shades and tones. But, you know, that's what I think, based on personal experience.
You finished?
Yes. And, no, one more thing. I will give the producers of The Americans credit for casting. The show opted to fill their Russian roles with natives, or at least people who know Russian. Lev Gorn, who plays KGB resident Arkady Ivanovich, was born in Stavropol. Kosta Ranin, who plays Oleg, hails from the Baltic Russian outpost of Kaliningrad. Annette Mahendru, who plays the double agent Nina, has a Russian mother and speaks six languages.
Ooh.
According to Joe Weisberg, the show's creator, using realistic-sounding characters was very important for us. We wanted everything to be as authentic as possible. Not having Americans speaking with Russian accents was key to doing that. We had our one exception to that, General Zhukov, who was played by a Polish actor.
Now you finished?
Yes, thank you.
Na zdorovye.
Wrong answer.
That's what you think. Mm. And that's another stereotype that exists in the West.
Yeah.
People there believe that na zdorovye is what Russians say when they drink to somebody's health, but that's all wrong. In actual fact, na zdorovye is what people say in answer to thank you. Спасибо, на здоровье. Thank you. You're welcome.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait a minute. Aren't you supposed to say пожалуйста in answer to спасибо? Thank you. You're welcome.
In Russian, just like in English, there are many ways of replying to thank you. In English, you can say welcome, my pleasure, be my guest, not at all, don't mention it. In Russian, you can say пожалуйста, не за что, на здоровье.
Okay, getting back to drinking.
Mm-hmm.
English-speaking people say cheers. Or, I drink to your health. What do people in Russia say?
They say exactly the same. Ваше здоровье,
uh-huh.
To your health. Or, будем здоровы. May we all be healthy.
Or simply, будем.
Which, if literally translated, sounds like, well, let us all be.
Or simply, to us. Oh, I know a better one. Ну, вздрогнем.
Let's shiver.
Or, let's rock. Stereotypes. Natalie, would you say the portrayal of Russians has moved away from the typical Uzi AK-47 slinging, vodka drinking, dancing with bear type hero?
On the background of St. Basil's Cathedral.
Yes.
It's all pretty much the same, and the Russian names sound crazy, don't they?
Yeah, you know what I love about such movies?
What?
It's when the screenplay calls for something to happen in Russia, and all of a sudden you see all these strange signs and things on the screen that belong in the writer's head and not in reality.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, let me give you a couple of examples. In one of the Jason Bourne movies, there's a close-up of Jason's forged Russian passports, according to which his name in Russian is pronounced as Lushtsakhum Lushtsakhum Kinaev. Or here's another one. Tom Hanks plays a man trapped in a terminal at New York's John F. Kennedy International Airport when he is denied entry into the United States and at the same time cannot return to his native country, the fictitious Krakosia, due to a revolution, naturally, you know. If we look closely at his driver's license, we see that he is a native of the city of Gomel.
Which is in Belarus, by the way.
And his real name is Gulina Gulnara.
It could do for a Tatar woman, yeah. Though it still sounds crazy, weird.
Oh, yeah, I love this one. Here's another one. At the very end of the Fantastic Four movie, there's a shot of a cargo vessel sailing away into the distance, into the sunset or whatever. Now, according to the Russian writing on the side of the ship, it's called, are you ready? The ship is called Foot Fingerhead, or in Russian, it's written as Golovka Paltsa Nagi. Oh, in the wonderful Simona movie with Al Pacino, offer him a cappuccino. There's a headline in a Russian newspaper, and the Russian newspaper is called Почти Правда.
Oh, that's great.
That's translated as almost truth. Almost.
Well, this is sarcasm and very witty. I would say the James Bond movies should take the cake for crazy Russian names.
Yeah.
Remember the old-time favorite from Russia with Love? The sinister old KGB woman agent is called Rosa Klebubu. Then we meet General Leonid Pushkin. That's a mixture of Leonid Brezhnev and Alexander Pushkin.
Right.
And General Anatoly Gogol in The Living Daylights. And an absolutely crazy, supposedly Georgian name.
Okay.
Ksenia Onatopupu in GoldenEye. And my favorite episode is in The Hunt for Red October. Well, remember the very first scene when the submarine is leaving and Sean Connery is on the deck saying in Russian, Holodriga I Surova. And in English it would sound like, it's freezing cold and severe.
Severe indeed, yes.
Is it English? No. And it's very funny Russian, very questionable. Personally, I think it is a certain tradition in British and American movies to make Russian names and words in general sound crazily phony. And I could never understand why all Russians who speak Russian in British and American movies do it with a thick American or British accent. There are so many Russians living in the West. Is it another stereotype or what? Can they hire a bunch of Russian immigrants for dubbing? I bet there are quite a few bilingual actors in Hollywood, just like you mentioned now and elsewhere, who speak beautiful Russian.
Well, you know something, to be fair, there's a bit of that here, too, when Russian actors portray Americans.
Absolutely.
They always speak like they're high on Red Bull or something, with very strange intonations, and they usually stress all the wrong words. As for the accent, it is. It is almost always phony.
That's been around for as long as I can remember, going back to old Soviet time movies of the 30s. Remember the 1930s blockbuster The Circus and the country's favorite actress, Lyubov Orlova, who played a white American woman with a black baby? That was a tragedy. And she repeated tragically to her Russian friend, Raika, impossible, Raika, impossible, to which Raika retorted with a heavy Russian accent, possible, possible. But then Raika is a Russian girl who doesn't know a word of English. And Orlova, who spent some time in the States, tried her best and frankly did a very good job. And you must remember, there were very few Americans at that time in the Soviet Union. Now, here's another story. Back in the 1980s, Radio Moscow announcer Nick Kurnikov was invited as a consultant to a Soviet movie that had something to do with American Marines. Mm-hmm. The Marines were played by students of the Moscow Foreign Languages College, so you can imagine what they sounded like. And Nick came back furious. They sounded like a bad Monty Python sketch. Well, in fact, he said something else. All right, I say, mate. No, yeah. They didn't say I say, mate. They said, I say, mate.
Well, I say let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about more stuff in Moscow and around the world. This is Radio Sputnik and From Moscow with Love. This is From Moscow with Love on Radio Sputnik. Hey, check out all our shows on the Sputnik News website at sputniknews.com/radio. And we're also on Facebook, facebook.com/From Moscow with Love.
And back to our listener, Keep Ivanov. Did you read the article he posted on our page?
Which one?
About mandatory vaccination for measles in California. Mm-hmm. Quite a few doctors call these measures draconian. And Kip writes, Natalie Stefanova, co-host of From Moscow with Love, warned of something along these lines.
Oh, come on. Listen, enlightened one. Vaccination prevents people from contracting dangerous illnesses.
And undermines our overall immune system. As a result, kids have stopped having children's diseases such as measles, German measles, and mumps, but constantly suffer from flu viruses, sore throat, lung infections, all sorts of colds and cough spells, whatnot. By the way, the most dangerous vaccines for our health are your favorite flu vaccines. Mm-hmm. Don't trust anyone who tells you differently. Take my word for it. They don't protect you during flu epidemics, but they do kill your immune system. Unfortunately, the WHO tends to experiment on us like on guinea pigs. I know it from epidemiologists and doctors I trust. Thank God some of our listeners heed my warnings, quite unlike you, my friend. Well, what can I do? There is no prophet without honor, except in his own country.
Oh, a prophet? What about the vaccination programs in Russia? Are there any?
Oh, yes. To begin with, all babies get vaccinated against TB in the first day of their life, in the very first day of their life, when they're still in the maternity ward. In the first year, they're vaccinated against polio, whooping cough, tetanus, and diphtheria. Later on, they're supposed to be revaccinated. And so it goes. Measles, German measles, mumps, flu, and nobody cares if the child is allergic or not, if the vaccine is pure or not. And finally, the person's immune system is completely ruined.
Right. Can we change the subject and talk about me?
Of course we can, darling. How's your knee?
Oh, God.
How's your torn meniscus? Did you get a second opinion?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact. I drove to one of Moscow's oldest medical establishments, the Ministry of Transportation Hospital. The Ministry of Transportation Hospital. What a name. What
I
a
know.
Name.
It's very close to the place where I live.
Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a team of doctors that examined my knee. And then,
wow.
And they had a look at the MRI that I done a week earlier at a private clinic.
The one which cost you an arm and a leg?
Ha, ha, ha. Yes, that's corny. Yes, they confirmed it was an old injury I never noticed before. And guess what? Yes, they recommended surgery. Now I simply need to work it into my schedule and decide on the date. The whole procedure should take no more than a day and a half, I'm told.
How would you compare the service at the state-run hospital to the private clinic?
You know something? I was pleasantly surprised. The medical staff was very professional. I especially liked the head nurse, who had a striking resemblance to Fiona Gallagher from the TV series Shameless. Oh, that Fiona. Anyway, I believe I'll be having the procedure done in late March, early April. Oh, by the way, I was told not to wear a brace because in my case, it doesn't help. It only makes things worse by cutting down the blood supply.
To get a second opinion is always good. Mm-hmm. And here's a third opinion for you from our listener in London, James Hogan, who writes, as a marathon runner who has run the equivalent of twice around the globe in racing and training, including two runs in Moscow, I'm intimately acquainted with my knees and their tendency to remind one that they are not indestructible. Vasily may still end up requiring surgery, but that is just one option and not the first one that should be chosen. A surgeon will not usually advise surgery unless he believes the torn cartilage will create functional problems in the knee. Mm-hmm. The problem can sometimes be treated by rehabilitation, which requires working with a physiotherapist. But even if this approach fails to solve the problem, it will better prepare the knee for surgery if that is deemed necessary. will assist in recovery and will most assuredly strengthen the knee for the future to help prevent further problems.
Wow. Thank you, James. Thank you for taking the time and writing about this. Very interesting indeed. I appreciate it.
And this story seems to have resonated with many listeners.
What?
Among them is naturally the same good old Kip Ivanov.
Mm-hmm.
And here's yet another opinion from my dear friend, Walt Salmano, MD in Victoria, British Columbia, who writes, first of all, most meniscal tears are chronic and do not require surgery. This is relatively new research.
Mm-hmm.
Physiotherapy has been shown to be as effective as surgery without the risks. The problem with surgery is that they would likely remove part or all of the meniscus, which then exposes bone-on-bone friction.
This is not
good at all, since inevitably you will end up with further problems, often within 5 years. Osteoarthritis.
Well, I don't know whether that's good news or bad news. I don't know. I'm confused. Walter, thank you. Confused is doesn't even describe it.
Oh, you should see his face now.
No surgery? But what do you do if your knee locks up?
Walter also comments on your MRI bill. Your $200 was a bargain. The multi-$1,000 cost that a listener mentioned sounds like highway robbery, no matter where it took place. I had a similar issue several years ago and paid for a private MRI here in Canada. Cost was $850 for the MRI alone. Hope that helps things with you. 73, Walt Salmano, MD, Victoria, British Columbia.
Thank you, Walt Salmanoff, MD. Is there another option for me, perhaps having more to do with constantly being pleasantly medicated with diazepam?
Oh.
Or as Dr. Gregory House would say, so your solution is to give me drugs?
You and your pills.
Okay, here's another one. I hurt my leg. I have a note.
Also House.
Yep.
My favorite House MD quote is, reality is almost always wrong.
This is From Moscow with Love via Radio Sputnik International and Radio Miami International. As someone who's been following developments in the media, I was pleasantly surprised to see that CNN might be returning back to Russia after it suspended its broadcasts a short while ago. It appears CNN has reapplied for a broadcasting license in Russia just a month after pulling the plug. The Interfax news agency cites a representative from Roskomnadzor, the agency that overlooks broadcasting here, saying that the application is for a universal license for CNN International and that a decision will soon be reached. CNN opened its office in Russia in 1983 and began broadcasting in the country in the early 1990s. However, last November, Time Warner told local operators it would stop broadcasting CNN in early 2015 because of controversial legislation prohibiting advertising on cable and satellite-delivered services. All that, of course, is good news. I used to start my days off with a hot cup of joe and a bit of Atlanta in my Moscow kitchen. Natalie Allen is so cute. As of late, CNN International programming has become very entertaining. As an example, in a recent story about Russia and the Ukraine, it seems to portray the two countries as one whole territory. A news anchor was standing on the backdrop of a map where the two countries had no borders whatsoever and were one of the same color. There was also a large Russian flag obscuring the supposed boundary between them.
Two fraternal nations united as one, comrade.
Yes, but that's not all. While reporting on talks between President Obama and Chancellor Merkel on the Ukraine crisis, it ran the ticker graphic, Obama considers arming pro-U.S. troops, referring to soldiers fighting in Ukraine.
What?
Yes, I'm telling you, that CNN programming is getting better and better. I'm certainly going to ask my cable operator to hook me up again. It's not only informative and entertaining, but intriguing. And there was another report that showed graphics of a map of the troubled region. It had Russia in red, Ukraine was yellow, and the Crimean Peninsula brown. Well, perhaps the graphics department in Atlanta knows something we don't yet. All right. Don't forget to send us your audio feedback in MP3 format. Our email is moscowwithlove@gmail.com.
Our time is up. We hope to see you again next week. Till then, take care.
Stay safe and...
Do svidaniya!